Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Houston, Texas. This is Dr. John Stamey and welcome to Houston Bigfoot. We've got a great show tonight. We always have a great show. We're going to have a lot of fun. First of all, I want to introduce my co-hosts from Houston, Texas, the one and only Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing awesome, John. I can't wait to hear about our other co-host's journey and trip that he had.
Exactly. Well, we're glad to have you here. And Matt Delph, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain, actually. If I did, it wouldn't matter.
That's exactly right. Well, we're glad you're here. And Matt, you've got some stories to tell us from the past couple of weeks. You've been gone.
Yeah, I've been actually had a great week. It started off with an expedition in unknown location in southern Georgia, and then I traveled south to Florida and hung out with some friends, met some new friends, and made it to the Florida Keys and Everglades, and so yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
Well, good. Well, tell us what all happened. It sounds like fun. Now, were you down? Did you go into that old bar that Ernest Hemingway used to hang out in and drink?
The one called Sloppy Joe's.
Uh-huh.
I went in there. Yep, I went in there. I didn't stay in there. It was really, really, really busy. But I went in there and I checked it out, looked around. It's a pretty neat place. And then I headed to. I went to his house and I snapped a picture of his house. I didn't go inside of it because they were giving tours, and I was trying to see everything I could and just didn't have time for a complete tour of the place, but I got to see it anyhow and snapped a picture of it. It's a pretty neat little town down there, and everything's all crammed together. They've got one of these little places called
the
Smallest Bar.
And that's the town of Key West, right?
Yeah, Key West, yep. Yeah, they got this little bar. It's called the Smallest Bar, and it's got two bar stools in it. That's all it's got. So I'd say they stay packed. But it was pretty
neat. Well, that's great. Now, how much are drinks down there?
At one place, I bought a beer, and it was $7 for a beer. So... needless to say, I didn't stay there very long. But most of the time, though, it's usually around $5, $6. But that one place is pretty high, $7. So
That's pretty cheap, actually, when you compare it to Myrtle Beach. I mean, drinks down here are $14,
$15.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
Is that mixed drink or just a beer?
For a beer, it's $8, $9, or $10.
Okay, yeah, that's what, yeah. See, you can almost buy, you can get a case for what you'd pay for 2-3 beers there.
That's exactly right.
Make
but
money.
It's the experience. But it's the experience
right.
Of being in a Myrtle Beach restaurant and paying $1 zillion for a beer. But that's okay. Anyway, glad you had a good time. So tell us a little bit more about your roaming around with the cryptids. Now that's kind of why we're here.
Yeah, well, started out the weekend. I had headed to southern Georgia to meet with my team and for an expedition. And they call this area the Troop Dew Corridor, I believe is what they call it. And it's known for lots of UFO activity, possibly a UFO crash site. They have some old Army Corps engineer, I believe, used to sit up in there, but it's all government land now. Imagine that. And so, of course, I've got a military team that I research with, which is pretty cool. And so, we had a small team this time, though. It wasn't a larger unit like we normally have, but it was still fun. We still got some results. The first night I got in there, I got in kind of late, and I didn't get there till about 11:30 at night, and they had just gotten back. from doing a couple rounds. And the way we do it is we set up a team for home base, and we'll have several different teams go out and strategically move certain ways, try and push stuff, try and gather all the data that we can, and take, like, you know, radiation readings, so on. But the first night I got there, and they had a what they call a bionic bird is what they call it. It's just like a siren sound. It just keeps going off, and it just keeps going off. And we can't recognize, you know, what it is. It sounds like a bird, but it's more robotic, and it just keeps going like a siren. And so I'd never heard anything like it until, well, when I got there that Friday night, they had that activity going on, but it had died down by the time I got there. So the next day, whenever we set out that night, we'd set up a team for base camp, and we had two teams deploy out into the field, and I was on team two, and team one, they had team one, team two, and team three was base camp, home. So we'd set out, we had one team go in one area, and they set up, and they waited. We strategically moved up this road, and made it to a point to where we sat for probably about 30 minutes, and there wasn't a whole lot of activity then. So then, after about 30 minutes, we had it all planned out, you know. We started moving in direction towards team one, and it was kind of odd because we could radio back to base camp, which was farther away than what team two was from us, but team two could not pick up a radio signal from us, which we thought was pretty odd. And we're like, well, maybe they don't have the radio on. But so radio back to base camp, and they say, yeah, they have the radio on. But we couldn't understand why we couldn't make connection with them. So we start moving towards team one to make sure that they are safe and everything's going on. And as we're going to team one, we finally get a signal. But it was weird, that bionic bird call started going off. I mean, it was just continuously like a siren. It just kept going off and off and off continuously. And then it quit. And then we heard a huge tree fall. And so we finally get radio contact with team one, and we tell them, okay, we're going to pass them up, and we're going to go flank sit in another position, as they're going to move out from their position and work their way back around us, try and push anything towards us. And as they pushed towards us and past us, they started hearing, they said that they heard, it sounded like, I don't know if it was bipedal or not, but they heard movement, something that was following us off the trail from us when we passed them. So as they come out and they start moving, they see like lights, like a, I don't know if it was like an orb or a lantern or something, but they seen big lights going through the wilderness there. And as they passed us is when we noticed small lights in the woods, and it was strange because they weren't lightning bugs. It was a solid, steady light, and it was small, but there were several of them, and they were sitting. All of a sudden, you'd see one. It wasn't two, though. It's just one light. So, they were probably about, I don't know, maybe in between waist high and chest high in the woods. Like whatever it was just like going parallel from us, and it didn't come out towards us. But it just stayed there, and the woods was awful quiet. But we couldn't identify the little lights that was watching us. It's kind of like if you've ever seen Peter Pan, you know, little Tinkerbell or something, that little light, kind of like a lightning bug, but it wasn't a lightning bug. It was very strange. And it was like they were strategically moving. So then a storm started coming, so we headed back and probably got back into base camp around 2 in the morning or so. And it came a major thunderstorm. I mean, it wasn't a lot of activity, but enough activity to keep the adrenaline flowing during that expedition, which was really cool, I thought.
Absolutely. Well, that's really cool. Kyler, you got any questions for Matt? This sounds very interesting.
Yeah, do you guys, when you're going out this late, are you guys using lights or are you kind of just waiting until your eyes get adjusted and going from there?
Okay. Now, this group that I'm with, we've got night vision, we've got thermal, we've got everything you need out there in the woods. So we're using night vision, we're using thermal, FLIR, just about everything. What I like to do is I like to keep my eyes focused in the dark, because once you look through the FLIR or the thermal or the night vision, it takes your eyes a minute or two to get adjusted again. So I only look through the thermal if I've got activity or something, or if I'm scouting the area. When I get in there, I'll scan it to see if I see any movement, or we'll have one person do that. They'll scan the area and let us know if they see anything. So yeah, we're moving. Plus, we keep red lamps and white light in case we need to bright light something.
Wow. Okay, so it's not like you're just walking in, right? You're just not like walking in blind with no light whatsoever. Because you told me about, or you just said you guys saw the lights like following you, but I was wondering, like, I mean, couldn't it just been somebody's flashlight? But that wouldn't make sense.
No,
if you're not using them.
Yeah, no, we normally don't. We use the minimum amount of light as possible for us to see. Most of the time, that night actually was, but I don't think we used a light hardly any, because the moon was shining super bright, and it was getting close to the full moon. And there was, on the trail that we were using, there were no covers over the top of the tree. It was wide open, so the moonlight shone right on the path that we was walking. But we'll vary, just like I said, we'll use just a little bit. And if most of the time, though, they use red headlamps. So that way we can distinguish what is what. But this was like a little neon light. It was different. It wasn't a lightning bug, though. And
How far off are you guys from any city light? Do you guys stay pretty deep in the forest?
Oh yeah, yeah. This is deep actually. I had to drive. Trying to think of how long I had to drive to get. It's a good 20 minutes from even a paved road. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm down a dirt road out in the middle. Yeah. Yeah. We take into all the considerations. You know, if there's maybe some street lights or anything like that, but there's nothing like that, or car lights. No, there's no cars. There was nobody out, you know. We're pretty isolated in these areas. And
yeah, it really makes you think about it then too.
Yeah, we don't know. We're planning on another trip, of course, to do some more research. You know, we think we had something first. They believe the first night, the kind of shocked whatever's out there. And then the second night when we were there, they think that they were kind of curious about us. We just need a few more days out there to actually see what it is out there, if we're picking up anything. Then again, you never know. We may not even get nothing if we go back again. But it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time.
So you also said – yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, as I said, we break it down, though, pretty good to when we think we'll have activity. We'll look for certain signs, you know, certain things that have happened in areas that we research. So there was a lot of solar flare activity that weekend as well. So we knew, you know, with all that energy, all that stuff going on, you know, it's the limits of whatever we had was probably going to be higher with the solar flare activity and solar storms going on than normal. So we figured we'd have more activity going on, especially with all the energy in the atmosphere.
Did you guys check out or happen to check out the big tree that you said had fallen over?
No, it was deep in there, and a huge storm came that night, so we had to head back in. We, like I said, it was probably about 2 in the morning, and we were all leaving the following morning. So when that storm came, we were trying to get out of the trees, especially with the lightning and everything that was going on. Our base camp still got trees around it, but we didn't want to be stranded out there because we hiked. I'd say we hiked out from base camp, maybe a mile or two out from base camp, possibly farther.
Mm-hmm.
So we were trying to get back before we got out in that nasty storm with the trees blowing and lightning, but we had to leave the next morning. So, but yeah, we heard the tree fall. We didn't go look for it though.
Right. Some things you just don't go look for, correct, Matt?
Well, correct. But normally something like that, we'll normally scope out the area. We'll do a day scout. But since that was our last night and we had a limited crew and limited time, we just didn't get a chance to actually go out and look at that. But normally we do. We'll go out the next day. And I always do what I call a perimeter sweep every morning. And Sunday morning I did. I didn't see no tracks. So, but we'll get up. First thing, as soon as it starts getting daylight, I go do a perimeter sweep around our base camp to see if any tracks, anything has tried to move in on us while we were asleep or, you know, was watching us or anything, see if I could see any signs of any activity around base camp. But I didn't see any then, but it had rained, too. It had come a nasty storm that night, so into the morning, actually. But overall, it was a good trip. We'll definitely go back with more people. We'll have more of our team together then so that we can have, you know, normally we have, we'll have a team that is, you know, we'll have basically a medic crew, you know, nurses. If we get a distress, you know, we've got enough people usually to send a team out to help another team if we have to. But this time we were just shorthanded on people and time. So, but it's still productive, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely it was. Well, that's good. Well, we're glad you had a good time and doing all that. So do you have some plans coming up for some excursions?
Yeah, I've got a expedition coming up with a friend of mine. She's got one, I think, Halloween weekend. I'm still planning one for a certain area myself.
Now, you're not talking about our friend Lori Wade, are you?
Yeah, we are. Yep,
we
I'm
love
just waiting
Lori.
On her to give me just waiting on her to give me the coordinates so I can do that. And then, like I said, I've got other stuff too. I'd like to do one. I'd like to go back out to the Everglades because when this past week I got to finally meet David Sheely in the Everglades there in Skunk Ape headquarters. And
now,
I've been friends with him on Facebook.
Now, Matt, hold on a minute and tell us, because a lot of our listeners don't know who David Sheely is.
Okay, David Sheely, he grew up in the Everglades, and he had a run-in with what they call down there a skunk ape, the Bigfoot, the Florida version of Bigfoot. They call it the skunk ape. He had a run-in with one whenever, I believe he was 10, with his brother. So he had seen it several yards away whenever he was younger. So he changed his life forever. So he pretty much grew up searching for this thing. And then he went and he was doing it. I mean, he was full-time researcher. He's boots-on-the-ground researcher. Just like I am, I love those type of people that are out there in the field doing the work. But he's got a dangerous territory that he's researching in. But he had went out, and then and I believe it was 98 or 97, he had went out to this one spot, and he had set up for 6 months straight. Every day he would go out to this one spot, and he finally got 27 photos of a skunk ape.
Jeez.
And then in 2000, he got a video of one in the same area. He got this full video. It's like an 8-minute video, but 2 minutes of it you can see the skunk ape going through the water. Now, this is what's good. A lot of people are like, well, why? You know, that could be a person in a suit. It could be this or that. And you can see he's got, like, long hair in the underarm stuff area. But what's unique about that is the speed of this thing. Now, when I met up this past week with David, he's got a place now that he calls Skunk Ape Headquarters. And he's got all kinds of alligators, got that big, almost 25-foot-long snake, second largest in the world, something like that, in there. He's got all kinds of different, you know, critters in there, and a little museum and gift shop. But his whole research there, but he allowed me to, like I said, I spent, you know, a good portion of time with him. And I got to go to the area where he had his encounter and look at it. Now, he's a tall guy. And whenever he filmed this and took his pictures, the tide, the water, it's the high water tide through the summer. You got a dry season and a wet season. Now, during the summertime, it's that wet and the swamp, it gets backed up. The water's coming through the Everglades there and stuff in the park. And when you walk out there to where he was, and like I said, he's a tall guy, just where he filmed from and witnessed taking pictures, he was about knee deep in water, and he's over 6 foot tall. So farther out you go, the deeper it gets. So this thing was at least thigh high water on him. And as you can see in the video, this thing is running. And he claims it was moving as fast as a deer. And it's moving pretty fast when I watch the video. So it's moving pretty quick through there. And he's just recently retired. He still goes out and researches, though. But he's doing a lot of treasure hunting now in the Keys. And he invited me to come out with him sometime, stay on his boat. And if I was going to be there this weekend, I would have done that. But I told him I'd be back down. I'm going to keep him, you know, great guy. But, yeah, he's got a lot of cool evidence. One thing, notice all his tracks that he got, too, are four-toed tracks. It's all four toes, these tracks are. So it's pretty interesting. And the area is just amazing. Anything could live out there. There's so much stuff out there. But it's dangerous. That's why he said he had to retire. He's getting older. He's been, because it's where the salt water and fresh water meet. So he's got crocodiles, alligators. He's had the big, huge snakes. He had one try and bite him in the face one time. Looked up and it tried to bite him in the face, a huge python. You've got the copperhead, or not copperheads, but the eastern rattlesnakes. You've got the cottonmouth water snakes, all venomous. You've got stingrays. He's been stuck by a stingray out there and had to sit up. I think he said he stayed out on this island for like 48 hours or something trying to recover. He had to take a knife and pull the barb out that got him in the leg or his foot. Had, you know, 9-10 foot alligators come after him. It's dangerous out there, but there's a lot of vegetation, a lot of area for this stuff to roam. He claims there's probably about 8 or 9 of them in that area of those skunk apes.
Okay.
Really?
It really is. And so describe what a skunk ape looks like as opposed to a regular animal.
Well, it's more like it's kind of like, it's like, you know how you've got your patty type shape, the body and stuff, but this is a little bit more slender, I believe, maybe not quite as tall, in between, you know, 6-7 foot tall. They're a little bit smaller, but they've got long hair, they've got an odor. They're more primate type, and apparently they leave a four-toed track. So unlike, you know, your regular Bigfoot with a five-toe, this has got a four-toed track. And they say it's characteristics of, some of them say characteristics of an orangutan. And he was explaining to me that he was using lima beans to bait them in. He was using lima beans to bait them in, and he said it's weird because he'll set up an area to catch tracks in. That's where he's caught a lot of tracks in, and he would bait them in using lima beans. And that's how he'd get his cast for his tracks. And he said that there was a bunch of tour buses going down through the Everglades there one time, and where he had baited or something, that a lot of people were seeing it, so he quit baiting there because he was scared that somebody was going to try and shoot it or get hit with a car or hurt somebody. So he quit baiting in that area. But he said there were several witnesses that would see it along the edge that he was baiting. So he said they build nests, too, and they get up high, up in the trees out there in the swamps. I took some pictures of the area, and it's wet. It's a wetland. The mosquitoes are nasty. You've got all kinds of stuff out there. While I was down there this week, I seen three alligators. I seen iguanas all over the place. I seen a huge turtle, and it wasn't a snapping turtle. And the turtle's supposed to be slow. This thing covered a distance super quick before it went flying into the water. I mean, it went flying across this open area, and I was like, holy cow. That turtle was moving. So you got a lot of stuff out there, predators too. So these things live off, you know, all that vegetation out there. I hadn't seen birds. I don't know what it was. It was kind of like a crane, maybe like a blue herring, but these things were humongous. They were taller than me. They were huge, kind of remind you of an ostrich. I took some pictures of them too out there. It's just an amazing place, and all the sightings and stuff is crazy because, I mean, you've got, if you look on a map and you go down there and look for Skunk Ape headquarters, he's right in the thick of it. His thing's right there. If you need gas and you're driving through the Everglades, you better get it before you hit the Everglades. That's all I'm going to say. You don't want to be stranded out there with no gas and limited phone service, mosquitoes that will carry you away, deer flies. It's a rough area. And you got all kinds of stuff. It's hard telling.
That's some dedication for that guy to spend that much time over there.
Yeah, and he knows all the plants and everything. He doesn't use any bug spray. He uses some kind of bush that's out there. He'll break it off and he'll rub it on his body to keep the mosquitoes and stuff away. He knows his stuff. He's out there. That's why I really appreciate all the work and effort that he's field work that he's put in, you know, just because I do the same. And, you know, see somebody else that's doing that dedicated is awesome. And me and him clicked right away. Like I said, I was friends with him before, but never, you know, met him face to face. But after I spent some time with him, met him face to face, it was pretty cool. We clicked pretty good.
Okay. This guy should have a TV show.
Huh?
This guy should have a TV show.
He's been on several, actually.
I don't know that you could because of the security involved, correct?
Oh, no, I don't mean out there. I just mean, like, with all the stuff that he's been avoiding throughout all of his time spent out there, it'd be like a good cartoon to just see all the stuff that he's avoiding death every time.
He's been, if you look him up, he's been on all kinds of shows, TV shows, everything. He's been on all kinds of Travel Channel, Discovery, Animal Planet, you name it. He's been on all of them. But, yeah, he's definitely dedicated. And it's kind of funny because I'm not used to be. I would have to adapt to that environment because I've been out in wetlands and stuff, but I've never been to the swamps where I had to deal with alligators.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, they have more panthers there than anything. So you've got these mountain lions. They've actually got mountain lion crossing signs in the middle of these little towns in there, down in there, that you pass through. It's pretty funny. It's like, nice.
And he's just sitting in the middle of all of it.
Yep. And I was watching a video of his, and he's out there barefoot, walking through this stuff barefoot. There was a documentary I seen, and this woman, he was taking her out, walking around through the thing, and he's out there barefoot. So he's done his dues, his time. He's done a lot of research and you know, I can actually found somebody that I like that has the boots on the ground experience like I like and has the knowledge of the whole area. So I'm going to try and spend some time down there. I have to get used to the environment where it's different from the mountains that I'm normally in or up north area. So it'd be a whole different, it'd be a different learning experience, but I think I need it for my research.
Wow. Those are some interesting stories, Matt. They really are. So so what is next for Matt Delf in terms of more explorations, going out with groups, or what is next with you?
Well, I plan on doing more boots-on-the-ground research, of course. I'm trying to get an expedition set up for one area close to me that's loaded with activity. We've talked about that in the past. I'm going to do that. I've got several different podcast shows, but I keep getting hate because I haven't been on them in a while. But Jessica, I'll be on your show. I'm just research that expeditions. I've got a trip planned to New Orleans. I've got to just pick the dates before this year's up. I want to hit those swamps. I'm about to visit some of the old, you know, haunted areas and stuff down in New Orleans, the French Quarters, of course, look into some of the vampire stuff, but really excited about trying to hit the swamps there in Louisiana. And they got the Rougarou and the Honey Island Swamp Monster. So pinpoint locations, doing a lot of scouting reports on that stuff, as well as try and get in all these expeditions in between then and there and after. And just loaded schedule.
Really? So you think so, huh?
Yeah. The Louisiana thing's really got me going because if you've ever heard of the Honey Island Swamp Monster, then...
Now, give us a little background on the Honey Island Swamp Monster. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's some people think it's a dog man type. There's a lot of reports of that. Some people, it's like a Bigfoot. I believe it was Harlan Ford back in the 60s. He did a lot of hunting on Honey Island, and he always talked about the Honey Island Swamp Monster. And this,
First of all, I'm going to interrupt you. Describe where Honey Island is.
It is in, it'd be west, be close to the Gulf area down there towards on the other side of New Orleans. And I would have to look at a map to give you a direct, it's down in Louisiana, down in the lower half, down in the swamps there. Along the
like,
Gulf.
How big is Honey Island?
That, I'm not sure because there's so many islands all messed, you know, it's all pieced from part to part. But they always give tours there. I'm not sure how many acres or whatever, but it's a pretty good isolated area. And you don't have a lot of people that go into there just for the fact that, you know, you're dealing with the same stuff like in the Everglades. You know, you've got all the gators and everything else, but a lot of people, locals that are close to around that whole area will tell you, you know, hey, it's, there's something out there, you know, they've heard it, and so on. But Harlan Ford, he used to hunt it, I guess. And I think you have to get there by boat, pretty sure you have to get there by boat. And after he had passed away, he had these three-toed tracks and everything. I guess his wife had all his stuff, and I guess his granddaughter, Dana, she had found these reels, this 8mm reel of film, and they watched it, and he's got it on video. You can see it walking through the swamp, this hairy bipedal creature walking through the swamp. He had it on video. So I'm going to try to get a hold of his granddaughter and get some more info and locations and all that stuff. I still got a lot of scouting to do, a lot of data to collect on it. But that's one of my goals before the end of this year, is to try and make it out there, plus spend some time with the family in New Orleans. So I'll definitely be gathering more data, more info on it, but it's such a, we're talking lots and lots, thousands of acres of swamp down through there. So
yeah, I was actually just looking at it. It says about 70,000 acres. So yeah, that's a big area. Holy crap.
Yeah, so I need to get the hot spots, the most recent sightings. I've still got a lot of data on it. But I definitely want to check it out. Definitely a goal.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds very interesting. Now, are you going to go down there by yourself or with a group of people or what?
No, I'll do a family vacation. My family will be with me, but I'll probably venture off on my own like I always do. And, yeah, we won't have a team going. I'm pretty much going to scout the area, talk to some locals. I will try and get a hold of his granddaughter. And I've already got her info, so I just got to reach out and talk to her some. Maybe she can give me some, you know, see if she'll go with me or help me, you know, pinpoint some locations or whatever for me, some hot spots. But, yeah, I'm not taking a team or nothing down there. Maybe in the future, if I get some people that are brave enough, but a lot of people, I know my military team, they would be all gung-ho for it, but just got to get time, get everybody together and so forth. But
okay, well,
this trip,
sounds like a lot of fun and something you can report on with us. Oh, yeah, I guess what, maybe October, November kind of time frame?
Yeah, I was probably going to try and plan the trip for October. I've already paid for the hotel room and all that stuff, but I just got to pick the dates that's still available through the year for that place, because I haven't picked the date yet. Just kind of waiting on my family because they're wanting to go and spend some time in New Orleans. So once I get that figured out, I'll have more of a date and time frame for everything. Of course, it'll have to be.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, that's not the kind of area that you want to spend with your family. I mean, you want to go out there and hunt.
Exactly, right. Yeah, it's a different environment down there in those swamps, especially at nighttime. It's bad enough during the day. Then once that sun goes down, it gets a little eerie. You don't have the you know, of course, we've got the equipment and stuff, but still, it's very dangerous, very dangerous. There's danger lurking around every step you take out there.
Well, you probably got literally everything just watching and trying to hunt you as you move through that area.
Exactly. Yeah, you're no longer the hunter. You're the hunted. You got to be careful.
Absolutely crazy.
That's why I really appreciate people like David Sheely that goes out there and us boots on the ground people. People don't realize, you know, the boots on the ground, it's a lot of work. Stuff we can come across and the dangers and stuff like that, you know. I mean, anything could happen to you out there, you know.
Summer. You could disappear. I mean, if you're only going by yourself, too, you could disappear and no one ever hear from you again.
Exactly. Exactly right. You know, down in the swamps, like I said, you've got all kinds of stuff down there, you know. Especially with the crocodiles and alligators and all the nasty snakes and stuff down there. They got snakes down there that are big enough, especially the Everglades, because I've seen one. Seen it in person. Sent John the picture. This massive snake.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this snake, they had found it down there in South Florida, out in the wild, and they had Guinness World Book of Records went, I think, in 2 years ago to David's Skunk Ape headquarters and measure it, and it was a few inches shy of the world record. But that was 2 years ago, so it could have passed it by now. But this snake is, I believe it's getting close to 25 foot long.
Jesus.
It takes 9 people to get it in and out where it's going. And you have to be careful because it could get aggressive. And, I mean, if that thing latches onto you, you're done for. If it wraps around you, it is nuts. It's well over 300 pounds. And it's all, you know, just muscle. If that thing was to wrap around you, if a person went out there, it could swallow a person, no doubt. This thing is massive. And he's got it in there in his exhibit. And it was funny, I got to watch him. He was feeding his alligators in his exhibit. And I'm standing next to this aquarium, and the lid's open. He's feeding them shrimp. But while he was getting the shrimp to feed them, and me and him are chit-chatting, I was standing next to the aquarium there, and I hear this alligator. It's hissing at me, and I look down there, and this little alligator, I mean, he's not very big, but he wasn't on the friendly side. He was hissing at me and on his kind of lean up on his back legs. David's like, don't put your finger in there. I said, don't worry, I didn't plan on it. He was definitely aware I was there, and he was letting me know he meant business.
Wow, like about how long was this little alligator?
Oh, gosh, these little ones, he's got, I believe they're maybe a 14-foot long. He's got alligators there about 14 foot long that he's got, and these are the babies, the eggs. And this one, these that were in this little aquarium, he's got several. I would say it was probably maybe 2.5 foot long, if that, including the tail. They weren't real big, but they were vicious. They would take your finger off, part of your hand off if they snapped you. And he was feeding them shrimp with these, like, tong tweezer things. And I just kept waiting. I mean, them things were snapping up there at it. They would definitely take part of your hand off if they latched onto you. Vicious. So I could just imagine with that big 14-foot or 9-foot, some of the ones that are out there in the Everglades just waiting. And he's got some other snakes in there too, some good 12-foot long pythons and stuff that he's caught from out there in the Everglades. He's got a nice little exhibit out there. I got you your T-shirt, John, from there.
Well, thank you very much. I had asked you to get me one 2 weeks ago, and you got it. And I look forward to seeing you because we're going to be together at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference up in Paris, Tennessee. And now, what color is my T-shirt? I got to ask that.
It is black. It is black.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Well, I intend to wear it as I host the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. I'll be there wearing it, and when I'm giving my talk, I will certainly wear it. That's going to be great, Matt. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. See, Kyler, you know what? All you have to do is ask Matt, and he's pretty accommodating when it comes to getting you T-shirts and good stuff, you know, good swag and all that. So that's what you have to do. I'm teaching you a skill. It's called talk to Matt and ask him to get you a T-shirt, and he probably will. Okay, so
yeah.
So I have now taught you a skill, right?
Good to know. Good to know. That's awesome.
That's exactly right, because I invited you and your brother up there to Tennessee Bigfoot. Hope you can make it. I don't know if you can or not. It's going to be a day, well, a little more than one day, because we're going to be going from like 11 to 5:30, and then we're going to be going out to eat, and Elijah Henderson is going to be doing his talk after, you know, when we're out eating and everything. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to have a blast. We're going to have Logan Gardner with his stories about the blue people. We've got a couple former guests on Scarycast that are coming up there. Robin McRae and Pat McRae are going to be there. It's just going to be a lot of fun. And everybody needs to get online, TennesseeBigfootConference.com, and you can buy tickets. Tickets are on sale. They're only 10 bucks a piece. And Matt will be there. I will be there. Robin and Pat McRae will be there. Elijah Henderson will be there. And, you know, David Eller will be there. And we got some really great guests, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I encourage
Matt, don't you encourage everyone to come up to that conference?
Yes, I've got a lot of friends in that area, Nashville area, so should have a pretty good turnout. So you better get your tickets while you can, actually.
That's right, because I don't think we have it about 120 tickets to sell, so it's going to be a good one. And they just had the International Dogman Conference? No, the North American Dogman Conference was just up there in Paris, yeah, Tennessee at this location, and it was very successful. And so we're looking forward to following them. And so the information is up there. I wanted to make sure it was there tonight before we got on Houston Bigfoot. Everybody needs to get on there and go check it out, buy tickets, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And, Matt, you have shared that with MECRO. That is your group, the Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, correct?
Yes, I will. I haven't shared it yet, but I will share it. I didn't have service earlier, so you know how that is out here in the parts unknown. You got to be in a certain place at a right angle to get service out here. But, yes, it will be up later on tonight, actually, on MECRO.
Now, you've got to be careful about making fun about parts unknown, because that comes from the wrestling world. And I'm a big wrestling fan and a former wrestling announcer. Well, I guess I'm still a wrestling announcer. And so don't make fun of parts unknown now, okay?
Nope. Parts unknown, all right, definitely.
All right, and I tell you what. That's exactly right. So anyway, what we want to do is we're getting ready for quitting time here. We're going to have Kyler ask a question of Matt, and then I'm going to ask a question of Matt, and we're going to have a lot of fun doing that, and then we're going to head for parts unknown. How's that, Matt?
Sounds good.
All right, Kyler, what do you have? What do you want to ask Matt based on our conversations tonight?
All right, well, you said you have a very busy schedule and you really want to go out by yourself on one of these expeditions out with, I forget his name, but that one guy out in the swamps. And let's say you actually get to do this and you're out there. Now, what I'm losing my mind trying to figure out, like, if something goes wrong, how in the world is anyone else supposed to find or know that you're out there? Like, do you have a process that you go through? Do you have like an immediate, like a radio or something on you that you always help or hold with you? What is,
well,
how do you make sure that someone can find you?
Well, okay. This is where I catch a lot of criticism for this, because I'm spontaneous. So as all my research partners, everybody's always on to me. What I do is not what you should do. If I come up missing, I guess I come up missing. But a lot of times I'm spontaneous. If I get a thought in my head or a process, or I'm thinking about a location, that's something, you know, if I, like, okay, I need to check this, or I need to do this, you know, randomly, that's what's the worst, because then I just get up in the middle of the night and I head out to a location. But, yeah, I used to – my research partner, Angelia, she used to jump my case all the time because I was always out doing that. But if it's planned, like, I will let somebody know, hey, I'm going to this area, I'll be back by this time. If I'm not back by this time, then, no, you know, there could be something up. But that's pretty much how I do it if I go out alone. Now, if I go out with others, then we got radios. We keep, you know – we're all in contact with one another and all that stuff. But, you know, I am – when I do go out in the woods, I am armed. I'm pretty knowledgeable of, you know, the woods. Survivor, definitely a survivor mode type guy. So if anything did happen to me, then just know I went out doing what I meant to do. That's the only thing I can say.
Yeah, and I wasn't, like, doubting your knowledge on the woods or anything like that. I was just curious because I honestly would – my friends and family would be freaking out if they figured out I just got up in the middle of the night and left.
Yeah, my family knows I do it, and course, you know, they're like, my mom used to tell me all the time, she'd be like, well, if something happens to him, because everybody used to ask her, aren't you scared for him? She's like, he went out doing what he was supposed to. She supported me 100%, and I loved it. I don't care how much you know of the woods and the wilderness, you should always have somebody know where you're at, be able to contact you if they can. Don't do what I do. I would never tell anybody to do what I do. It's kind of ignorant that I do it, but I'm just so spontaneous and random at times. And I don't care how
Matt,
well you know the woods. It's always dangerous.
Matt, here's what we're going to do to you at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. We're going to splash up something behind you that says parental advisory, don't do this the way Matt does. And I'm serious because, you know, now me, I've got some expeditions planned. And I'm going to tell you something. I think the whole world is going to know where I am. Even John LeMay, the great paranormal author out there in Roswell, New Mexico, even John's going to know where I am. I mean, everyone's going to know where I am, because I'll tell you what, if all of a sudden they can't find me, somebody better come looking. Now, Kyler, when you come exploring with me, I guess I am the opposite of Matt Delph. I'm going to make sure that everybody can find me, because I do not want to end up in a cave down a coal mine in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. I do not want to do that with some, you know, whatever attacking me or whatever. I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to be extremely careful. And Robin McRae likes my idea of being very careful, because I'm going to make sure that I get back, or at least I'm going to do everything I can to get back. So maybe, Kyler, you might want to go out with me first before you try going out with Matt Delph. It might be a little better if you want to make sure you come back. I'm trying to be as polite as I can be.
You were polite. But if I'm going out with somebody else, the only time people don't know where I'm at is if it's spontaneous, if it's middle of the night, Todd, or something like that. Then I'll just hop up and, you know, go out. But most of the time I'll tell somebody, hey, I'm going out here, this area or whatever, if I'm going alone. Now, if I'm going with a team, that's different, you know, because we've got, you know, people know where we're at. We're a pretty good group, and, you know, we all the safety measures are in place. But the only time it's really people don't know if I do it spontaneously, which I'm very bad for, and I don't recommend it, but if I get a thought in my head, I say, well, I didn't check this. I need to check this in this area. I wonder if this is in this area. Then I'll get up. It don't matter what time of day it is, what time of night. I just hop up and go. But I don't recommend that for others. But if I'm going out with somebody else, yeah, if it's planned, then I let people know, hey, I'll be in this area. If, you know, we'll radio when we get there and when we come back out, and so forth. And all these teams that we do, safety precautions are in place. It's still dangerous. I don't care how good you are out in the woods. It is always dangerous. Anything can get you, any type. I mean, you've got anything unexpected could happen out there. So you got to be very, very careful.
Well, it really can. I mean, listen, I'll go ahead and admit, okay, I'm checking to make sure. I will go ahead and admit I have had 8 UFO encounters. They were all terrifying. Nobody knew where I was. And I do my best to stay away from situations like that. Because, I don't know, I love life. Kyler, do you love life as much as I do?
Absolutely. Holy crap, absolutely.
That's right, and I'm just probably not that kind of guy. I don't do the spontaneous stuff to that extent. I mean, as a very smart man said one time, when you're in Bulgaria and you are looking at a convent on top of the hill, and some townspeople tell you that the convent is haunted by the devil, you probably should listen to them, Matt.
Matt's probably thinking, I'm going there right now.
And I'm talking about one of the greatest horror stories ever put on film, which is The Nun, and that's based on a true story. And don't do that. I'm sorry. You know, there are better things to do, like go to a museum on Sunday. Okay, so that's me.
You mentioned UFO real quick. I forgot to mention while I was in Key West. Now there's that Navy Air Force base right there, right? Well, I was out on the beach that night right before the full moon, and there was something. It was higher than the planes. It looked like a star, but it was moving zigzag, vertical, horizontal, nothing like a plane. I don't know what it was, but I just figured I'd throw that out there, too. I watched it for quite a while. Then it got right over top of me and just stayed. It was pretty neat. It was way up past the airplanes, all that stuff. It was,
well, you know, which I thought was this is my – this will be my question, and this is my take on all that. They're out there. There are tons of UFOs. They do all kinds of crazy things. And I'm tired, I think, of everyone's amazement that, oh, my goodness, I just saw a UFO, this and that and that and this. I've got a friend named Kyle Peckham. He is one of my very best friends. He and I ran a couple of paranormal Comic-Cons in Charlotte. And he has had several experiences. In fact, I ought to call him tonight and talk to him because he's always interesting to talk to. And he's going to take me to a church where he has seen some very strange things. And, you know, they're there. Everybody needs to chill out. They're there. Try to stay inside. Try to be careful. Try not to get caught because you don't want to be taken up in a UFO. You don't know what's going to happen to you. You don't. And try to stay away from that junk. I mean, it's not good. It's not safe. It's not healthy. And just be sure to be able to go to McDonald's in the morning and get yourself a sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin and enjoy life. And that's, Matt, that's my comment to you. Be careful. You can't be too careful. So I don't know. But anyway, Matt, as usual, we have enjoyed hearing your stories. They're a lot of fun, and you will admit that we got to be careful and don't do it the way Matt does it because that might lead to an early end. But anyway, thanks a lot, Matt, for being with us, and we'll all be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. I'll have some stories. Matt will have some stories. Kyler will have some stories. And we're going to have a good time on the one and only Houston Bigfoot. So now I want everyone to say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. Good night, and thank you.
Good night. And, Matt, be sure to announce that you will be there on, oh, my goodness, and you'll never believe what just came by on the news channel. Elon Musk is buying Manchester United. Oh, my goodness. The greatest soccer team in the world. He's going to buy it. And, you know, he's an interesting fellow. Wish I could buy things like Elon Musk does. But anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next time. Say goodbye.
Good night, everyone.
Bye, guys.